So I have been fascinated with the stories of the Bible since I was a kid. I remember my mom signed me up for vacation Bible school from the next door neighbor that had asked her. And the theme of vacation Bible school was David and Goliath. And I remember I was a little let down that we didn't actually get to have slingshots. But I remember this great story, and here's the first honest confession of the morning. There will be two of these. The first honest confession is that when I was a kid, I went through several chubby stages. Absolutely. And in these chubby stages, there's this sense of you get picked on a lot, you know? You're the kid that gets picked on, and it's not fun. But when I heard the story of David and Goliath, the story of this mighty warrior who was threatening the Israelites, and I heard of David, I was like, I can relate to that, right? The underdog gets one over every once in a while. And I remember there's this sense of fascination with that. There was a sense that this story was speaking to me. And then in middle school, Miss Wilson, our English teacher, she was so excited that everyone in class got to go to the Buell Theater to see Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat. Now, my culture up until that point in time was like The Simpsons and Saved by the Bell, right? And so at this, to go to the Buell Theater, to have to like dress up and go see this play, I was amazed. And I was amazed by the story of Joseph and how Joseph had to overcome adversity. And there was this sense, even as a little eighth grader, all awkward and chubby-like, that this story had something to teach me about those moments that I'm going to go through, those challenges that I'm going to go through. And then, of course, there was high school. And for me, high school meant you're sort of like, you have all those inadequacies, you have all those insecurities. And then coupled on that for me was that this is right around the period where my dad died. And so I have all this layer of like teenage stuff going on. And I remember that my mom had bought me this little poster. And it had a poem on it, a poem that comes from the Bible. And a simple poem is, I depend on God alone. I put my hope in him. Trust in God at all times, my people. And then it says, pour out your hearts to him, for God is a refuge for us. And I remember that I put that poem right on the wall, right next to my desk in my room. And every day, every morning, I would just say that simple poem. And there was something so powerful about those words in the Bible that just seemed to kind of grab me. And I began to sort of find myself in these beautiful words of Scripture. And then, of course, there was college. And in college, I heard for the first time the story of David and Mephibosheth. Say it with me, Mephibosheth. Funnest name to say in the Bible, Mephibosheth. And in this really incredible story that happens in 2 Samuel 9 and then throughout the rest of 2 Samuel, there's a young boy and he's crippled in both legs during the civil war in Israel. He's dropped. And of course, he lives in Lo Debar. He's sort of left to die on the outskirts of society. And King David hears about him, and King David calls him to the castle and showers this love on him and allows him to sit at the king's table. And so there's this crippled boy who in that society would have been further ostracized by his being crippled. And he's sitting at the king's table, eating big, huge steaks with King David. And so this story spoke to me about this God of love, this God of inclusive love, this God that welcomes everybody in and breaks down all these walls that we set up with people. And it's interesting how this story worked on me because as I kind of grew and I matured in college, I could definitely see myself sometimes through Mephibosheth, but there was this shift in me that, oh my gosh, sometimes I'm David. And sometimes I'm the one that has to break down the barriers and invite people to this love. So this fascination with the stories of the Bible continued throughout my life. And in this adulthood phase of having kids, Psalm 23 has just shimmered to me even more. And it's like, it's this incredible psalm it's unfortunate that we always read it at funerals because it's a psalm that teaches us about the journey of life. And it's so simplistic and its words are so rich. And it says, the Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside still waters. He restores my soul. He leads me in right paths for his name's sake. And even though I walk through the darkest valley, I fear no evil, for you are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. You anoint my head with oil, and my cup overflows. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I shall dwell in the house of the Lord my whole life long. And this beautiful Hebrew poetry, written thousands of years ago, I allowed it just to sort of like ricochet and echo in my head. And there's a sense of such beauty and such calm and such peace. And you begin to look at your life and all the pain and all the struggles, and you begin to think, there is a beautiful God. There is a story that God has been painting upon the world. And in some way, I'm a part of that great story. It's a fascinating story. It's a compelling story that begins to invite you in slowly and then sort of open you to all that your life could mean, to all that it could be. There's a philosopher, Alasdair MacIntyre, and he writes this book called After Virtue, and there's this incredible quote that I want to read to you. It says, "It is through hearing stories about wicked stepmothers, lost children, good but misguided kings, wolves that suckle twin boys, oldest sons who receive no inheritance but must make their way in the world, and youngest sons who waste their inheritance on riotous living and go into exile to live with the swine, that children learn or are mislearned both what a child and what a parent is, what the cast of characters may be in the drama to which they have been born, and what the ways of the world are. Deprive children of stories, and you leave them unscripted, anxious stutterers in their actions as in their words." Code words. Whenever we talk about children, or when we talk about what the teenagers of the world need, we're actually talking about us. And we're actually talking about what we missed out on as a kid and as a youth and what we need to make a good world. So this incredible quote reminds us of the power of story. And it makes me rethink about these fascinating Bible stories, that these are the stories that have helped me learn how to make my way in the world. What would I have been like if I wouldn't have known that Joseph overcomes the adversity and becomes great despite all that adversity, right? What would my life be like if I never knew about David and Mephibosheth and this great love that we can offer and these boundaries we can break down for others? Where would my life have been without the story of Jesus and this compelling man of compassion and forgiveness who transformed the world as we know it? So we are invited into this epic story, this broad and wide story, and somehow in that, God opens up the story and allows each one of us to have a subplot, a mini story in the overwhelming arching story that is going on, a story that we find ourselves, our gifts and who we are and how we were created, making a big difference. And we make it in very small ways, but the big story is always playing over us and underneath us, and we are a part of something that is so much bigger than anything we could imagine. Second nerd confession. So when I finished college, I thought I had this great idea that I would do more school. And so I went to seminary, which spent 3 years studying the Bible, Greek and Hebrew verbs. And I just threw myself into what the Bible could mean. And as I look back on it now and I talk to my lawyer friends and my business friends and my doctor friends and even my like innovative creative friends, I'm like, what was I doing? You know, 3 years. You spend 3 years of your life. And so my time at seminary was transformative because in seminary, I was able to start asking some questions about the Bible, especially about women's roles in the church. And so I started studying the Gospel of John, and I wrote a whole master's thesis that took me a ton of hours and time. And I started to ask myself the question, if this story is truly inclusive, if this is the storybook that we can trust our lives in, then it better have a really compelling voice for women and for their own role in this great story. And I just want to show you one incredible thing that I saw with my studying. I threw myself into the Gospel of John in particular, and I started noticing that at the pivotal points in this story, women are involved. Not only are women involved at pivotal points, they propel the action forward. So when you read the Gospel of John to your kids, especially to, like, say, my daughter, you are reminding them of the role of women in early Christianity. And then without the role of women in early Christianity, the message of inclusive love for all would never have been moved forward. And so you have the mother of Jesus in chapter 2, who basically is like, hey, Jesus, it's time to do your thing. Turn that water into wine, if you remember. And boom, this is a huge symbol of Jubilee and God's kingdom coming to the earth. Wine. Oh, amazing. And then you have the Samaritan woman who is sort of the first evangelist in the entire world. Then you have Martha and you have Mary and their pivotal roles. And then you have the weeping women at the cross, which is a sign that they got it. Remember, at this point in the story, the men are the ones who don't get it. They're like, no, we're not going to hand you over to the Romans. And it's like, Jesus is like, this is how it's going to go. But the women are the ones who grieve and who mourn, who know that the story has something bigger than they don't know yet. And then, of course, Mary Magdalene, she's the first one at the tomb, right? And if you remember how Peter was like, oh, Mary, you don't know what you're talking about. And Mary's like, no, here's what's going down. And it's like this incredible, amazing crescendo of the role of women in this great story of the Bible. And so Donald Miller, he has this great quote. He's simplified down what it means to say story. And he says that story is a character who wants something and overcomes conflict to get it. And so in the Bible, we have 66 books written over 1,000 years with different type of genres and different type of stories. And we have this big working of how God has worked in the world. But do we have other stories that help us simplify and think through this? Stories like another epic battle, Star Wars, right? Yes, can I get an amen to Star Wars? Amen. Yes, right. So if we're thinking about Donald Miller or thinking about story as a character who overcomes conflict to get something, we have to think about Luke Skywalker, Princess Leia, right? And if we could kind of all have a group brainstorm session, which would be amazing, we could throw out maybe one or two words of what Luke was after, what his story is all about. And I don't have it all right, and I'm going to give you sort of my thoughts on it. But Luke's story is about family. Luke, if you remember, he is passionate about his father, Anakin Skywalker, a.k.a. Darth Vader. I'm sorry if I ruined the plot for you. You really should have seen it by now. And coming back to the forces of good, right? His whole passion is, my dad, there's still good left in him. He can be brought back. And of course, in a very small way at the end of the narrative, he is brought back into the Force. Princess Leia is different, though, because Princess Leia is all about bringing peace to her homeland. She is like the commander-in-chief in this movie, right? Commanding and helping people to come back so that the force of good can stop all the destruction that's going on, right? So let me introduce you to another epic battle, Harry Potter. Dun, 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 dun. Amazing, right? I once was talking to a 21-year-old, and he was telling me how important Harry Potter was to him, and I was like, yeah, I get it. It's an incredible story. And he looked at me, and he goes, no. When Harry was 12, I was 12. And I was like, yes, yes, you were. Amazing. And so Harry Potter. Now, if you remember, Harry Potter starts his life living with the Dursleys, right? And he lives under that little staircase in the little decrepit, almost storage place, right? And so Harry's story from beginning to end is all about significance. How can he have a significant life? And then, of course, Hermione. She's the smart one. She's the one who gets A's and never misses a test, and she's the goody-two-shoes in the class, right? Well, in a different way, her story is about significance too. How can a woman have a strong, significant voice? By being smart, right? By being bright, by being the first in the class all the time. And then I bring to you another epic story. Oh, yes. Frozen. And so in this incredible story, we want to think about the characters of Anna and Kristoff, right? And if you think about that, all those songs, how many of your kids are like frozen crazy right now? Holy cow, amazing. Amazing, right? And in this really, really great story, Anna, she desires connection. Her sister has shut her out. She doesn't understand what's going on. She gets engaged like at a party of like 4 hours, right? To which any dad in the room is like, no, that will not happen. Not even if he's a king, right? But especially if he's a king, maybe. And so in this story, Anna's whole story, what her theme of her whole life is connection, is finding meaningful connection with other people. And then Kristoff, and it's interesting, right? Because Kristoff is sort of this rugged ice man, and his only family, right, is these trolls, right? And so his story is also similar to her, a desire for family, a desire to be connected more deeply than just with the rock trolls, however cool they really are. So these three examples, right, all show us sort of that story is a character who wants something and overcomes conflict to get it. But I raise those examples because we want to come back to the really hard one. What's God's story? You know, this huge overarching Bible, and I just want to approach it with some humility of like, we're talking about God here. You know, Frozen's much easier to handle than like God. And so I just want to suggest to you a couple things about this incredible story of God. And so Donald Miller in the book is going to make a lot of these positive turns and these negative turns, right? And so this big sweeping narrative of the Bible starts off with this incredible positive turn. God creates beauty. And so in Genesis, God is the one who creates the human world. Human beings are made in God's image and likeness. This is the beginning of our story. The world is good. You are good. You are made with something with sacred worth within you. But of course, if you've read the story, we go to this hugely negative turn, which human evil is displayed, right? And it's not just one story. It's not just Adam and Eve. It's several stories. Cain and Abel and the wicked people in Genesis 6 and the Tower of Babel and Sodom and Gomorrah. It's as if the story is trying to remind us that there's something really, really good in every human being. And then, of course, there's something that is just not quite right. There's a sense of distrust we have amongst each other. There's something that needs to be mended or put to right within us. And then we have God, again, working for good, freeing the slaves in Egypt, this incredible God who listens to people on the margins and who acts to free them. But then again, in Exodus 32, after the slaves are freed, there's this, the people create a calf, right? These false gods. And then the story moves upward of this covenant fidelity, right, of Noah and Abraham, as if God is saying over and over again, return to me, return to me. And this is the message of the prophets as well. Return to me. You are loved. There is a greater story that's unfolding and your life plays a part. And then, of course, I kind of wrote in here that there's some big questions with these stories. I wrote that as God's story unfolds, there's always the human tendency towards negative turns. Some examples, wars and injustice and domination and power and ego and greed, right? And we've seen these played out on minor scales and on major world scales. And then some negative turns, though, are not directly human failures. I want to note that. Some are the powers and principalities of this world. There are powers that set up systems and structures of injustice and discrimination. And another negative turn that's not human fault all the time is disease. These are things we deal with, big questions, and we can't dive into all that now, but I wanted to name it for us as a really important thing. But when we look at that, and then we have the unexpected king, right? That in the midst of all that human mess-making, Jesus comes and teaches us the way of forgiveness, the way of love, the way of compassion for all. And then we have this mandate, not a simple mandate to make a new world here and now, to work to where beauty flourishes for all people. And so what's the theme of God's life? If we think about what we did with Star Wars and what we did, is the theme of God's life is beloved community. This is a God who wants to come in our midst and create a beloved community of people so that every person will know their sacred worth, and that so somehow the energy and synergy that we have with each other here sort of spills out into the world, making the world a beautiful place. That's just a stab at it. It's really hard to do that. Another way to say it is that covenant partnership with humans that creates a new world. So God has designed to put the world together in such a way that there is a beginning, there is a middle, and there is an end. And we are striving towards that end when our world is bursting with newness and beauty and love for all people. But we're not there, because God invites every one of us into this dynamic subplot, a plot where we play a role to make this world beautiful with God, in partnership with God. And so through the season of Lent, this 7 weeks in the Christian church, we think simply Lent is finding ourselves again in God's story, is learning more about who we are and the role we play in this mini story each of us play out. And so next week, for the next 6 weeks, we're going to look at these negative and positive turns in our life that we're calling scenes. Then we're going to look at our own life themes, and we're going to struggle with it together. Then we're going to look at redeeming these negative turns in our life. Then we're going to look at desire and our passions and our interests and what we truly want to get out of this life. Then we're going to look at conflict. And then we're going to have a huge celebration on Easter Sunday where we're going to talk about climactic scenes and celebrate with one another. So when I was 16 years old, I was a junior on the cross-country team. We had a terrible year. We were not as good as we were supposed to be. And our cross-country coach came to us and was like, yeah, not good. And then he had a plan. He said, what I want to do, we have 6 weeks left in this season. What I want to do is focus on the three main goals that we have to become a better team. We're going to support each other. We're going to encourage each other. And we're going to see just how good we could maybe get, even though we know we've blown it certain parts of the season. And it was kind of like amazing. And there was this challenge to us, right? And I remember the team really came together over it. And I mean, extra practicing and teamwork. And we actually started to care for one another in it. And at the end, we actually went to all conference as a team. We got to go to state as a team. And it was just amazing. And it wasn't this sense of how good one of our runners is. It was this sense of we did it together. And so what I want to ask you, as we are journeying through Lent with one another, I've never ever done this before. I want to ask you for the next 6 weeks to devote yourself to each teaching that we do here, or to devote yourself to a small group that we're going to be having, so that you can truly dive into your subplot in this story, so that we can truly flourish as a community. And along with that is just saying, I'm asking you for these 6 weeks to say, I'm all in here. I'm going to really go after this. And this means taking your field guide and looking at all these little stations and saying, I'm gonna participate, and I'm gonna take seriously all that St. Andrew Wildflower is challenging me to.